Today on Annenberg Radio News,
77 million baby boomers are aging, and notwithstanding the fact that we're desperately trying not to get older, we are.
Stop our rapidly graying population from getting abused. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Tuesday, September 20th, 2011. I'm Tiffany Brannon. Gay and lesbian members of the military are celebrating the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, which went into effect at midnight. But, as Megan Sweese reports, activists in Los Angeles are worried the repeal won't end discrimination.
Marine Corps veteran Tom Carpenter is a board member of the Service Members Legal Defense Network.
Never in the history of our country since 1776 has an American in uniform been able to say, I am gay or lesbian or bisexual.
Military officials say the end of the 18-year-old Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy will be a smooth transition. But Carpenter, who was at a press conference at the L.A. Gay and Lesbian Center, said there still will be some rough spots.
There is no provision for non-discrimination in this law. All this law did is bring us back to 1993.
In Washington, Defense Secretary Leon Panetta told reporters that 97% of the 2.3 million service members have been trained about the implementation of the repeal. He said there is a zero-tolerance policy for harassment.
Coming out remains our number one weapon against homophobia. And finally, service members who do need no longer fear for their jobs.
That's Jim Key, Chief Public Affairs Officer of the LA Gay and Lesbian Center. Carpenter estimates that 65,000 active duty National Guard and Reserve forces could be affected by the repeal. This doesn't include transgendered people, however. The Defense of Marriage Act is also a stumbling block for the military, Carpenter says.
In one fell swoop, the world has changed. In spite of that fact, there is still much more that needs to be done.
Activists are still fighting to gain the same marriage benefits as straight troops. Megan Sweese, Annenberg Radio News.
The West Hollywood City Council tentatively approved an ordinance late last night that could ban the sale of clothing made from fur and animal hair. As Rosalie Murphy reports, it would be the first city in the world to ban fur.
City Council got a standing ovation at 1:15 a.m. today when it decided West Hollywood might ban the sale of fur. But there is still plenty of hair-raising questions. Keith Kaplan, the executive director of the Fur Information Council of America, sides with city business leaders in opposing the move. He says the ordinance is a half measure, which would only hurt the fashion industry.
To me, cooperation and education is a much better way to go than forcing a ban on a product, forcing restrictions on business, and restricting consumer freedoms.
He says the ordinance is just too sweeping. Around 90 of the city's clothing stores carry fur fashions. But founder of the Animal Alliance, Ellen Laventhal, told Annenberg TV News that maybe the city's vibrant fashion industry could benefit from a fur ban.
Well, we're hoping that young designers will take a look at what happens in West Hollywood and have to ask themselves, what is it that goes into fur? You know, what is it about this industry that would make an entire city ban the sale of fur?
But the city hasn't banned the sale of fur, Kaplan argues. The ordinance doesn't even touch leather, meat, or even fur-adorned furniture, just fashion.
It mitigates the city's ability to make the claims that it initially set out to make of being fur-free, because they're not. Come on into West Hollywood and buy a fur pillow. In fact, buy a fur throw and cut armholes in it and wear it as a cape. But you can't buy a cape.
City Council will make changes to the ordinance at least once more before taking a final vote.
That was Rosalie Murphy for Annenberg Radio News. L.A. Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa is in Washington today, joining six other mayors in support of President Obama's new Jobs Act. Villaraigosa says the bill is especially important for cities like L.A., and he offered national politicians an invitation to find out why.
We want the president and our congressional leaders to come to our cities to see the state of our roads, our highways, our bridges, our airports, and our ports, to hear from our constituents that their number one concern is jobs, and their number two concern is jobs. In fact, they're overwhelmingly focused on jobs.
The mayor says he's hopeful Congress can work across the aisle to create new jobs. All this year, the headlines have reported disastrous earthquakes, rampant fires, and floods. Being prepared for the worst was the focus of an emergency preparedness expo at the Natural History Museum. Carla Robinson went to learn more about these efforts.
We've all been told to get an emergency kit together, but the reality is most Californians aren't prepared. Mike Dayton is the secretary of the California Emergency Management Agency. He says only 40% of California residents are ready for an emergency, and he's trying to change that.
See, one of our missions is to get Californians more prepared, so we're trying to capture their attention any way possible. We are encouraging people to assemble a kit for themselves, or a ready kit just in case a disaster strikes, and have a family disaster plan.
The expo is giving out pamphlets with valuable information, and people could even pick up a free emergency kit from the Red Cross. Penny Morris, a mother of two young sons, attended the expo. She walked away determined to make a plan.
I feel like there's a lot more that I should be doing after coming here. They've had a lot of really good information that's made me think about the fact that I'm not as prepared as I should be.
Steve Lieberman of the LA County Office of Emergency Management summed up the goal for the expo.
The mantra of the day is just, again, be informed, be prepared, and be ready.
In light of the recent natural disasters, it's important to prepare for what you can't predict. Carla Robinson, Annenberg Radio News.
Congress is debating whether to cut the budget for public transit by more than one-third. Some L.A. residents are fighting back. Ariel Edwards-Levy has more.
Los Angeles is the ultimate car city, but thousands of its residents still rely on public transit. These riders tend to earn less than average L.A. County residents, which means even smaller fare increases can be tough. Bonnie Stillwater is a single mom. Both she and her daughter rely on the bus.
The fares increase are so high, it takes one-fifth of my monthly budget to pay for bus fares for me and my daughter.
Stillwater is speaking at a rally called Don't X Out Public Transit, one of more than 20 happening today across the country. They're protesting a proposed 37% budget cut to transit funding. If the cuts pass Congress, they could lead to longer waits and fewer buses. Ryan Wiggins is a SoCal organizer for Transportation for America. He says those cuts would primarily hurt people like Stillwater.
Those people who don't have a car, don't have access to vehicles, who depend on both rail and bus to get to and from their places of work.
Wiggins says the cuts would also lead to poorly maintained buses and delay the building of new rail projects. Ariel Edwards-Levy, Annenberg Radio News.
Tonight will be cool and clear with a low of 62 degrees. Don't forget your cardigan. Tomorrow we won't have a perfectly clear blue sky, but the air will be warm with a high of 79 degrees, and then it's sun, 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 here we come for the next 3 days. Thursday's high will be 81 degrees. A big sigh of relief for Los Angeles grocery store shoppers and workers. The union and the management of Ralph's, Vaughn's, and Albertsons agreed to a tentative contract, as Smith Abondad has reaction to the agreement.
Unionized workers are relieved that an agreement was reached with grocery chains that will preserve their health care benefits. Angela Baker has worked at Vaughn's for 6 years.
I am so happy that we did not have to strike. It has been a big stressor for all the people in my local area, customers and employees alike. We are just so happy that agreement has been made and that we can go and vote on this on Friday.
8 years ago, grocery store workers walked off the job for 4 months. It was a bruising strike that cost the industry $2 billion and sent shoppers to other food markets. No one was anxious to have a repeat. Some 62,000 grocery store workers have been working without a contract since March. Rick Ikaza is president of the United Food Commercial Workers, Local 770. He says health care was a huge priority.
We did compromise, but at the same time achieved our goal of making sure that we would have health care in this industry And, you know, this is just about Southern California grocery workers. It's about labor in general. When companies make the profits that these companies make, and they want to refuse to give us the benefits, this is for labor. We won a victory for all of labor.
Jackie Gitman is a cashier at Ralph's Supermarket in Encino. She says the original contract would have only given workers health care for a year.
They were only going to fund our trust fund, our benefit fund, for a year. So on a three-year contract, we only have health care for a year. What's the point? And we wanted stuff that was affordable, since these companies made over $3 billion last year, Ralph's, Albertsons, and Vons did. And we just figure we were just only asking them for 3% of their profits last year just to fund a health care plan for 3 years.
Workers are expected to vote on the contract this weekend. Vons, Ralph's, and Albertsons released a joint statement saying the contract, quote, continues to preserve good wages, secure pensions, and access to quality, affordable health care, while allowing us to be competitive in the marketplace. Smitha Bandade, Annenberg Radio News.
Later on Annenberg Radio News, policymakers are warning that we're entering a lost decade. We head to the streets to hear what Angelenos think. Are we lost? In the white room. We now have a list of winners for the 2011 MacArthur Genius Fellows. The fellows come from backgrounds ranging from music to medicine. They each received $500,000 grants. I spoke with winner and elder rights lawyer Marie-Therese Connolly today about the abuse of elderly citizens across the nation. You were one of the forces behind the Elder Justice Act. What do you hope the act does for future generations?
One of the things that we hope the act does is to elevate the issue of elder abuse on the national agenda and in the national conversation about a number of different topics. Elder abuse has been a largely hidden epidemic. Although we've spent countless billions to extend life, we've devoted much less attention and resources to enhancing the safety and well-being in the years that we've gained.
What main obstacles do you have to overcome to see the piece of legislation really work?
Well, right now, funding. There has been no funding appropriated for implementation of the Elder Justice Act, and there's been no funding appropriated for implementation of other elder justice provisions in the Older Americans Act. The California Department of Social Services has estimated that there are 40,000 cases of elder abuse in Los Angeles County a year. As you know, the 77 million baby boomers are aging, and notwithstanding the fact that we're desperately trying not to get older, we are. And so what that means is that we're going to have more old people in this country than we've ever had before. For example, already people 85 and older are the fastest growing part of the population, with people 100 and older being a close second. So that's a really astounding number, and one that really demands our attention, because that means that an awful lot of people are being abused, neglected, and exploited. For every one case of elder abuse that we see, another 23.5 never come to light. So that means that about 96% of cases never come to attention. And so, you know, one of the things that's so compelling in my mind, and one of the reasons that makes me want to work on these issues, is that I can't think of another issue that affects as many people where less is being done.
Why do you think our society is struggling with elder abuse and elder neglect?
That's a really complicated question that I've thought about a lot. I don't have definitive answers, but I have some thoughts about it. I think we live in a very ageist society. It's easier for people to be sympathetic to or hopeful for other kinds of victims who are not older. I think there's also an element of denial. You know, we just don't want to acknowledge that we're getting old, either individually or as a society. And so that, I think, causes us to not look at these issues as carefully as we should or might. We really want to focus on the very positive aspects of aging, which is really important to do also. But we can't look at them to the exclusion of the potential risks and harm that befall so many people. I mean, the numbers are emerging that it's probably in the neighborhood of at least 6 million people a year in the country are abused, neglected, or financially exploited. And elder abuse robs people of their independence and means that they end up in facilities. Then if we start assessing the cost, it's no doubt a cost of many billions of dollars.
If you could give a word of advice or encouragement to the victims or families, what would you say to them?
To victims and family members of victims, I would say don't give up hope. There are really important and great resources in the Southern California area. And then the other thing is, if somebody is concerned about whether elder abuse has occurred or not, ask questions.
Half of the Californians surveyed in a Newfield poll say they approve of Governor Jerry Brown's job performance, but they're not happy about part of the budget he signed this summer. Two-thirds said they didn't like the automatic cuts to education and health care that would be triggered if tax revenues fall short. Only one in five of those polled said they approved the legislature's record. A jury may put an end to the Irvine 11 trial tonight. 10 students were charged with misdemeanors for conspiring to interrupt and yelling during a speech by Israeli Ambassador Michael Oren. Defense attorneys made the argument that students carried out a peaceful, brief protest that didn't stop Oren from speaking. Also, they said students weren't guilty of the misdemeanor charges simply because they planned to protest the meeting. District Attorney Dan Wagner must prove that the students knew of the rules but still conspired to break them. The students could face fines, probation with community service, or even up to 6 months in jail if convicted. Troy Davis, who was convicted of the murder of a Georgia policeman in 1989, will be executed tomorrow. Davis was denied a last plea for clemency. The case has brought attention once again to the ongoing ideological battle over the death penalty. Fundraisers and protesters were held all over the world in support of Davis. His supporters insist that witnesses have changed their stories and that there is no DNA evidence linking Davis to the murder. We're tweeting regularly, and we would love to hear from you in the Twitter sphere. Our handle is Annenberg Radio. And keep clicking on our website, annenbergradio.org, for more news about South Los Angeles. Now we check in with Madeline Segura to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision.
Well, good afternoon, Trojans. My name is Madeline, and here's a look at some of our top stories. UCLA released a report today assuring Americans that a recession is nowhere in sight. But it's not all good news. The UCLA Anderson forecast also predicted a continued high for unemployment rates in California. And Don't Ask, Don't Tell has been repealed. The controversial measure that used to keep openly gay military servicemen and women was overturned this morning. And to all of you fashionistas out there, heads up, the city of West Hollywood unanimously approved a ban on the sale of clothing with real animal fur. Well, that's it for now. We hope that all of you will tune in tonight at 6 p.m. to Annenberg TV News.
Thank you, Madeline. Kay Ryan is a distinguished American poet who came to poetry late in her life. She's another winner of this year's MacArthur Fellowship. The Niagara River is her 2005 poem about the complicated feelings that emerge when looking back on one's youth. Ryan's reading of her poem comes courtesy of the Academy of American Poets.
As though the river were a floor, we position our table and chairs upon it, eat, and have conversation. As it moves along, we notice, as calmly as though dining room paintings were being replaced, the changing scenes along the shore. We do know, this is the Niagara River, but it is hard to remember what that means.
Well, that's it for this Tuesday. We had help today from Ellen Castor, Solomon Fuentes, and Channel 11 News. Emily Frost is our producer, and for all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Tiffany Brannon.